Accession number 18035, Reel 4.
The Jaguar program started under different circumstances. BAC started with the Jaguar with Breguet Aviation, and the relations between BAC and Breguet were very good, and it was possible to build a sensible collaboration. When Breguet, with the encouragement of the French government, was taken over by Dassault and became AMD BA, and then subsequently just AMD, the situation changed very much. And we found in many of the export contracts we were actually in competition with our partner. India was a case in point.
Well, the Mirage.
Yeah. Mm. But fortunately we won out in India. Now, Dassault is a very good company. Their engineers are excellent, and I personally got on very well with Benno Vallier, who was an excellent chap. But the whole ethos was, if we are in a project, we, Dassault, run it. That isn't the way to collaborate. And things funded. I mean, one reason that the AF, the Anglo-French Variable Geometry Aircraft, funded was because we were working on a joint project and with Dassault. And the engineers got on marvellously. Fortunately, because the laws of Newton are roughly the same in every country. Great unifying. But we found they were building, in their experimental shop, a directly competitive aircraft. And when we said to our government officials, look, this is what's going on, you better investigate, they were appalled and surprised. And of course, it eventually funded. Well, you can't collaborate on that sort of basis.
No. You weren't involved in the Concorde program at all, presumably?
Yes. Now, BAC went through various changes, and in 1972, I was asked to take over both the civil side as well as the military, and became managing director aircraft for all the BAC aircraft. This was before Concorde went into service. And so I moved back from the north, from Preston, down to the present home here in 73. For a year I sort of operated flitting to and fro and living wherever I happened to fetch up. And I must say, Kathleen and the family put up with it magnificently. The first problem I found in relation to Concorde was that the whole program was being developed on the basis of, I think it was, production of 3 aircraft a month. And 1 or 2 BAC establishments were about to be deluged in large machine tools, because so much of the Concorde was carved from a solid. So a marketing assessment revealed that this couldn't possibly be sold. So we slowed down and cancelled a lot of the deliveries of these machine tools. Some were transferred to the military operations up in the north, where they were about to order more machine tools of that type. So that worked out reasonably well. And the next problem was completing the development. I'd like to make it quite clear that I didn't play any part at all in the basic design of the Concorde, nor in its early flight development. That story has been well recorded elsewhere. I just inherited the tail end of the British tail end of the development program, mm. and the problem of getting it delivered to British Airways. So we revamped the development team a bit on strict project management lines. Mick Wilde became the project manager, and the flight clearance program was pushed ahead. It was a joint one, but with Aerospatiale. But there was a British end to it. Brian Trutchell, of course, was an absolute tower of strength during that period. And eventually we handed over the first aircraft to British Airways. That took some years of very hard work. By that time, I think I'm right in saying BAC had become British Aerospace. By that time, I was chairman and chief executive of the aircraft group in British Aerospace. I was directly responsible for all the aircraft side of aerospace, and George Jefferson for the guided weapons. That really begins quite another story.
I diverted you off the Tornado program because we started talking about collaborative ventures, and I asked you why the Jaguar program was so successful in comparison to the French putative involvement in the MRCA. Were you going to go on and talk a bit more about the Tornado program as it turned out with Germany and Italy? Is there anything more you wanted to say on it?
Well, I was fairly heavily involved with both because I was a joint chairman of the CEPICAT with the Jaguar program. So I saw the inside of all that and was a founder member of Panavia and did my stint as chairman during the program. We rotated the chairmanship, you see, on all these projects. And we didn't have junior and senior partners. We played it on an equal basis, which I think has been shown to pay off. The early stages of the what became the Tornado program were quite dramatic because at one stage it was a bit like 10 little niggard boys. I shouldn't say that, should I really?
Racist. 10 little Indians, and even that is bad.
No. But we started off with quite a number of nations on the MRCA. I remember that in addition to the Italians, Germans, and ourselves, the Canadians were involved, the Dutch were involved, and I think the Belgians. There were a whole series of meetings, some of them in the Fokker premises. But that was a particularly dramatic one, because the Canadian chap was called out to take a telephone call, and he came back and said, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave. I've just been told we don't have any money to continue in the project." Bang. Then the Dutch elected to go for the for an American collaboration, and the Belgians followed them. So there were just the three left. But I'm happy to say that, chiefly because of the good relationships with Ludwig Boko and his senior people, Gerard Madelon, for example, who was an absolutely splendid chap, and I'm glad to say I've remained friends with them both. They really are two good chaps. And the Italians, we got the whole thing off the ground. A lot of people said it was never going to work, the Americans in particular, and there was a Granada program, a fairly late stage when we got some jolly good data on the aeroplane and knew that it was going to do pretty well, which thoroughly damned it and said it couldn't do this, it couldn't do that, and we had test results which the producer had an hour and a quarter's interview with Gero Madelon, and because Gero didn't say anything which fitted in with his preconceived notions, not 1 second of that hour and a quarter interview appeared on the television programme.
Unbelievable.
And we said, why not? And the producer said, oh, well, he didn't think it fitted in. We had a rather stormy interview with Granada, as a result of which we got a letter of apology. But that sort of thing does happen. Mm. The fascinating thing was that, of course, the first time the Tornado indulged in competitive attack and bombing in America, to American rules, with four Tornadoes, I think it was, operating against 32 competing American aircraft, the Tornado swept the board. And
this was
repeated
the Sac-Trophy, was it?
Yeah. Mm. And is it the Sac Trophy?
They have an annual competition.
It was the annual tactical bombing competition. The sort of thing for which the Tornado was designed, and which this program said it couldn't do. One thing which I think is not generally appreciated is that the strength of the Italian position throughout. We started with Fiat Aviazione, but there were rearrangements to make in their industry as well. Various firms were knocked together and it became Air Italia. But the interesting thing is, the Italians declared a program, a number of aircraft, and they stuck absolutely to that right throughout. Now, at various stages, the Germans and the British have been humming and hawing in the usual sort of way, although I'm glad to say that both have actually more than met their original commitments in terms of orders. But it's not generally appreciated that Italians have been a very constant factor. Mm. And at the moment, they're led by an excellent chap, Fausto Ceretti, who is playing quite a large part with Ivan Yates, of course, in Eurofighter.
I was going to ask you about that. Has that started to take shapes in people's minds before you retired, or is this something?
Yes, we were discussing the next fighter whilst I was still with aerospace. I retired from aerospace in the middle of 83. And by that time we were forming ideas about that sort of aeroplane. But of course the chap who has really pushed it forward in British aerospace has been Ivan Yates, whom I'm happy to say was one of the early Wartonians. And going back to my remarks at the beginning, he was obviously identifiable before he was 27 as a future leader in the organisation, as was Frank Rowe, who before Ivan became managing director at Preston. And of course another Wartonian is Sid Gillibrand, who is now chairman of the Civil Aircraft Company of Aerospace. And Dick Evans, the chief executive designate of British Aerospace, you know, he's taking over from Ray Ligo at the end of the year. He is ex-Wharton and played a very large part in securing the Indian Jaguar contract, together with Alan Keyes. And the three of us spent goodness knows how long in South Block in Delhi negotiating that contract.
South Block being what?
The headquarters of the Ministry of Defence in India.
Meanwhile, so, on the EFA programme, the French are facing the bottomless pit of the Rafale programme. I had heard thoughts that they were trying to get back in onto the EFA. I don't know how true that is now.
On the
European fighter aircraft.
That I don't know. You better ask Ivan Yates, because he's the chap who's really up with it all. One thing I do want to do before finishing, and we must finish soon, although there's a lot more that one could go on nattering about, many fascinating personalities and events. Frank Bezick. I don't think Frank Bezick's role in the formation of British Aerospace has ever really received adequate tributes.
And he was the Labour Minister of Aviation, wasn't he?
He held one or two Labour ministerial positions and was the first chairman of British Aerospace on its formation in 1977. And he fought like mad and fought a number of his political colleagues in order to get what he thought was right for British Aerospace. And not just what he thought was right for British Aerospace, but what the chaps in British Aerospace thought were right. He provided a very sound basis. He gave George Jefferson and I a very free hand in the way we ran our two bits of the organisation. And in turn, we were able to give our senior chaps a fairly free hand. See, in the aircraft group, the aircraft group organisation resulted from the senior executives on both sides. The integration process was very important, you see. Hawker Siddeley Aircraft and BAC had been competing like mad. So, in the aircraft group, we put a number of the senior executives from both sides together, the younger chaps, and said, look, you're the guys who are going to have to run the organisation. You consider what's the right way to set up this organisation in detail. Because we had a lot of factories, you see, that have been competing against each other, and they all had to be integrated, and so on. A whole number of different product ranges, which all had to be integrated and dovetailed. A whole number of different departments, and a whole number of separate organisations which had to be coordinated. And Eric Rubinson and I wrote out a long list of the points they were to consider carefully and advise us on, and threw in a few ideas, and the resulting organisation, I think, worked extremely well. We had six different outfits, six different divisions, which we ran as separate companies. And this provided a tremendous incentive to the people. Now, Frank went along with that and he backed it, and I'm very grateful for his support. After I retired in 83. The organisation was changed. The groups were disbanded. And a lot of the initiatives which had been started were, I think, hampered as a result. It's interesting that under Roland Smith, the organisation has reverted to a series of coordinated but reasonably self-contained companies, which is the way we ran those divisions. They had their own accounts and everything, and they had to produce the results. They had the figures staring them in the face every 4 weeks.
And they actually had whatever transactions they had, they were done on a money-changing basis. They had to pay for services.
Yeah, and you see, people felt they had a real job to do. And equally, theirs was a responsibility. It was tremendous motivation. Now, Frank backed all that, and it was jolly good. In the same way that George Edwards had backed his MDs in BAC. And I'm glad to see that aerospace is now back on that track. And that the lads from Wharton are playing a reasonable part in it. Well, I think I'll have to finish there.
That sounds like a very good note to end on, Sir Frederick, and thank you very much for the interview.